And he followed this man into the shower room, because we're all living like in dormitories in this logging camp. They were trailers, actually hooked trailer to trailer. And he followed him into the shower room. And, "Hey, Jim," he says, and he picked him up, bunched his shirt in front of him below his neck and lifted him up, and he had his head on the ceiling. And he says, "I don't want to hear anything about Jerry anymore. He got it, and he was shaking him. I didn't see it, but another friend of mine said, 'Hey, did you hear what Tiny done?' I says, 'No.' And he told me that's what he'd done." And he said that to this man a couple of times. "Nothing. I don't want to hear nothing about Jerry anymore." And he dropped him on the floor. And it stopped. This guy stopped. They were afraid of the 6'8" Vietnam vet. And so I stayed. But I'm always with Vern after with Tiny, you know, just like connected to the hip. We'd go together everywhere together and work together. And we got such good friends, and we're going to go to Hawaii because the logging camp would shut down when it snows, because the snow gets deep in Sitka, Alaska. Wouldn't be able to find the logs. And we had an agreement we'd go to Hawaii because he had some relatives there, and we could stay there and draw unemployment in Hawaii. "Okay, we'll do that, Tiny," I said. And so we're logging. One day I was running across these logs, or across this, I guess in a way it's a canyon on the side of the mountain. And I tripped over this branch sticking out in this log. And I was falling down towards falling down head first, because head's the heaviest part of our head. And I hit these branches on the way down, and it flipped me over. And I landed on my feet, and the doctor said my feet must have been crossed, and I landed. Because I broke, he said you chipped off the heads of your fifth lumbar. Because they had to pack me out of the bush in a stretcher, because my nerves were pinched and stuff, and I was hurting, and I couldn't stand up, and it was hurting. And they took me to the hospital in Sitka. And they x-rayed me, found out what was wrong, and immobilized me and told me that, yeah, you have to be really careful how you work and do things now, because your back will go out easy. So I was in the hospital, and the logging camp had shut down and started snowing, and Vern comes in and said, "Hey, Jerry, you still want to go to Hawaii?" And I said, "I don't know when I'm going to get out of here, Vern. You might as well leave." "No, I'll wait. No, 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 Vern, you can go." And he left. And they eventually let me out of the hospital, and I went home. And, you know, it was a depressing time for me, because my back would go out easy, and I turn wrong, lift up wrong, and my back would go out. And so I had to look for healing for that. But my mind, you know, I guess that experience with Vern, in some ways, got to know there are good people out there that would help me. You know, over my lifetime, you know, when I was logging camp, of course I was drinking, and I became addicted even heavier there. Because I went to logging camp right after residential school. And started drinking. Always in the back of my mind was my experience in the school system, day school and residential school. And I think about it today, that caused all my mental health problems. We call mental health my depression, my anger, my anxiety, my guilt and shame feelings, you know. And But I want to let you know that it wasn't 24/7 in Jerry's life. I still enjoyed things. I still enjoyed playing sports. I enjoyed watching sports. I had good laughs. I enjoyed food. But there's always this with me. This, I guess it's a secret. And I... But eventually, that catches up to you. You can only carry it so long. I learned later on in life that trauma victims can only carry, hide the trauma in their body for so long, and you're going to explode or implode. And I was carrying that, and it's like something hidden way deep in me, and I don't even know what it was anymore, but I know I'm not feeling right. I had suicide ideation. I had suicide thoughts in my head. I don't want to live. You know, my life's hateful to me. I don't want to be here. Look at the thoughts in my head. Wishing someone would save me. Wishing someone would come and save me. Or someone would say, hey, let's quit drinking together, Jerry. I'm wishing for that. And it's not happening. It stopped. It didn't stop. But I remember I went to an elder in my community. He became our social worker. And I went to him and I said, Toma, I said, you know, I'd seen him. I went to see him. It was a beautiful sunny day in my community. Blue skies, white clouds, you know, mountains and glaciers. And I told him, Toma, I know it's beautiful outside. It's a beautiful sunny day, but I can't feel it. He looks at me. He said, oh, my, you better get help, he says. Didn't even say mental health or anything, but that's what it was. He says, you need help. So I started then. I wasn't looking for it, but it came, and I was lucky. Because the big help for me at that time was, just to maintain myself, you know, like I was telling you, it wasn't 24/7. I had quit drinking it by this time in my life, and... But I was still depressed, angry, and afraid, and feel guilty and shameful for different reasons, you know, about being a parent or a family member or being indigenous. But there was this workshop, and people would talk about it. This guy had a name, and he was doing these sessions called Indian Is, and it was about identity and about positive thinking. So I went, and... Oh my gosh, it opened the door to the healing for my mind. You know, because he's talking about affirmations and saying things over and over and over again. An affirmation to stop negative thinking. And he'd give us examples. He'd tell us stories about change. About changing your mind, about being persistent and consistent by saying things over and over again. You know, and he would talk about examples about people and how they overcome fear and how they could change. He gave an example, and he was a wonderful speaker, storyteller. And he says, if I put a big 20-foot plank here, a 2x8, you know, 2 inches thick and 8 inches wide, and put it up in the air in these chairs, and said, if I put a $100 bill at the end of it, would any of you volunteer to walk on that plank to get that $100 bill? And oh, hands shot up. Oh yeah, I will. He says, yeah, I would too. He says, I'd even dance and hop on one foot to go across to get that $100 bill. But it would change if I put that plank 50 feet in the air. He says, then how many of you would volunteer to hop across that board to get that money? He says, the plank is still the same. It's sturdy enough to hold us, but the height, now we start to get afraid. He says, that shows you the power of the mind. So he gave us these examples. Then he gave us examples of the power of the mind and change by saying an affirmation over and over and over again. He says, garbage in, garbage out. And the way we get the garbage out, sometimes we have to say it over and over and over again. I'm a good, powerful, indigenous man. That's one of the examples he's given. And for the woman, I'm a good indigenous woman, powerful. You know, so he's teaching us how to reverse that stupid Indian, crazy Indian message that we'd been hearing as children and as people. And people will still say things like that, that we're drunken Indians. You know, so holy cow, that was transformational, that workshop. He told us one story, and I don't know if it's a story, but it's a good story, you know. It's one of his examples. He's talking about a prince, probably in India or somewhere, you know, that was born, and the baby, and it was a troublesome birth, and he was born, and he was deformed. So he grew up, and he struggled in life, you know, because of his deformity. And he said he became a young teenager, and his dad asked him, what do you want for your birthday? I'll get you anything you want. And the son said, I want you to hire the best carver in the realm to carve a marble statue of me with a perfect body, with my face on it. His dad said, no, I can't do that. I won't do that. Because he thought it would make his son more ashamed of himself. And his son was adamant and said, no, that's what I want, Dad. So his dad gave in and hired a carver, master carver, to make the statue. And our teacher said, carried on with the story and said, they would see that young man, and the father, the statue was delivered, and the father says, where do you want us to put it? Right outside my window of my bedroom, he says. So that's where the dad put the statue. And the story goes that the young man would be there looking out the window, you know, in the morning, in the evening, for an hour at a time, and he'd be standing there and he'd be sweating. And he's trying to straighten up his body to resemble that statue. So he kept doing that day after day after day. And it started to work. He started to change the shape of his body that his muscles had formed. Because I guess it wasn't like a permanent defect, it was a birthing problem that caused him to be crooked. But just by the power of his mind and his determination, and he had an example, and he was looking at it every day, that's what he wanted to be. And that was the story. And I don't know if it's true, but it's an inspirational story for me. Helped me to change my mind. It was a good story. He had stories like that, this facilitator. They were inspirational about doing things over and over and over again and not giving up. Because that's what I was doing. I was giving up. And now I had something to do. One of my affirmations were, and I'd say day in, day out, I'm a lovable, capable human being. Because before that, I'm talking to myself, oh, I'm a stupid Indian. Oh, I'm crazy. I'm drunken. Because I started to drink. I became what those words were. And that is part of his message. That's why he says, garbage in, garbage out. Get that garbage out of your head. Those messages that are not true. And today I know they're not true. So that's what I started to do, using affirmations. And that, you know, it brings you so far. And in my life, you know, I still, you know, I guess I don't know wanting to use the word total heal, but I still had work to do, you know, because I still had hate in me, you know, for people that hurt me and when I was a child. These are individuals, not society, because society in a way hurt us too, and the government's laws and policies about getting the Indian out of the child and, you know, putting us in a reservation and allowing racism to run wild in the country. You know, all of those things, that's society stuff, you know, that's government stuff. You know, nobody seemed to be stopping it. Today, I feel there are people that want to stop it in the Canadian society. Governments will say, yeah, we'll do UNDRIP, we'll do all of those things, you know, but and to me, it's like they're saying that with their tongue in their cheek, you know how it is when people go nudge, nudge, wink, wink, yeah, we'll sign on to UNDRIP, but they don't implement it. That's been my observation. That's just Jerry's observation. So I want you to understand that. You know, it's my hate, because hate's that's a powerful word, hate, to hate somebody. I hated my abusers. I'd have nightmares. That showed that I was suffering from trauma, because I'd have these same nightmares until I went through healing, you know, and that was many years of my life. I'd have these nightmares. Finally, one elder says to me, Jerry, you know, you're really good that you're in the healing path. You're doing ceremony. You go bathe in the morning. You run. You're doing all of these things. And they were maintaining my life for sure. They were doing good, tremendous good for me. But I had this one thing left that I needed to work on. It was the hate. I hated the British people because they're the colonizer. When I heard that they planted smallpox blankets on the West Coast and it reached all the way up into Lulwood and killed, they say up to 85% of the Stetlium people, and I was going, oh my gosh. I said, I wondered why my ancestors didn't fight these people, stop them from taking over our territory. And then when I'd learned that many people died of smallpox in that pandemic, I was thinking, oh my gosh, they were weakened. They couldn't resist. Because I'd found out, too, that I think it's 1854, there were 10,000 gold miners in the town of Lulwood, my hometown. And my people, meanwhile, were decimated by smallpox. So they couldn't stop them. There's too many of them. So I forgave my people for not... I tell people not having tough immigration laws and make sure they do good profiles on these people coming in, you know. So I forgave them for that because I said they couldn't. They were, and you know, when you got 10,000 people in one town, they're going to eat the deer meat and the fish that we live on. So my people were weakened, couldn't resist, outnumbered. So I understood that. But I still hated the English for planting those smallpox blankets, creating reservations and residential schools. Because that's who I believe done it. And those were called, people today call them the colonizers. Taking over the country. Taking over the economy. Taking over, eradicating our traditional governments and putting the Indian Act on us, how to live and our small reserves, you know, that I've heard different numbers, but I go by the number 0.05% of the land mass in Canada as Indian reserve, lands reserved for Indians. It's small. That's small. That allows the privilege of the Canadians. And helped us to be poor people. So I was carrying this hate for the British people and for Christians. So there's different events in my life that got me to forgive. Because some of the healers are saying, you know, you have to forgive, Jerry. In your healing path, you need to forgive. I say, no, why should I forgive? I don't want, they hurt me. Why should I forgive them for hurting me? Because I thought forgive means that's what it meant. It's okay that you hurt me. I'm not going to get back at you. It's okay. I was thinking, like, I guess Christian ways, maybe, you know, when they say turn the other cheek when somebody hurts you. I said, no, I'm not going to do that. I looked up the word in the dictionary and it said to let go. It's a verb. It's an action. And like a light bulb went off in my head. I said, yeah, hey, I'll do that. And I felt good. Almost immediately I started to feel better, but I still needed to work at it. But it was there. It was, oh my gosh, I can change. I can change my mind again. So I said, okay, I'm going to do that. What that started, you know, what started that I can forgive was I went to this conference at UBC called Crimes Against Humanity, and I presented on sexual abuse at a residential school and impacts on Indigenous health by the sexual abuse. So I did my presentation. They said, you can stay and listen to the other presenters. So I stayed. And I heard these presenters talk about sex slaves, about genocide, about the Holocaust, and all these crimes against humanity in the world. And by the end of the last day, I'm thinking, I have to hear something so I can have faith in humanity again, because I'm losing faith. There's so much crimes against humanity. And the one that started me on the path of changing my mind in regards to hate went to the podium. He's the last speaker. He was an elder Chinese man. He had two canes, and he's hobbling up to the podium with his interpreter. Told us his name and the village he came from in China, and he pointed his legs, and he says, I got the rotten leg disease. It'll never get better, and they say it'll only get worse as each day goes by. And he says, my village was anthraxed by the evil Japanese in the world, in the war. And when I heard him say evil Japanese, my world started to change. Because right away I said, the evil white men hurt me, and the evil Christians hurt me. He changed me, and that opened the door for me doing more healing work in regards to my hate and my mind. So with the British, my wife's sister went to England, you know, and my wife would go visit her, and she said, you want to come to England? I says, no, you go. I'll just stay home. You go and see your sister. So she would go. Happened, I think, for a couple of years, and then one day she says to me, my sister's getting married. She fell in love with an Englishman. And I said, oh, my gosh, I have to go to England. Because that's family, and I tell people, you have to support family, so I have to live up to my word. So I said, okay, I'll go. I rented a suit, and, you know. So it's a year later that we're going to go to England. And so I'm thinking, you know how we are. I mull things over, and I think about things, and I'm thinking, I'm going to England. And I hate those British people. I better walk my talk, and the elder had been telling me to forgive my abusers and my people that make me feel negative. And I said, okay, I'm gonna forgive the British people and the Queen of England for colonizing us and for what happened with the evil ones. So I told my wife, yeah, I'm going to... I'll do a ceremony. And I said, she said, where in England? I said, I was thinking Speaker's Corner. I'll go there and I'll bring a rattle and I'll sing and I'll do a ceremony to forgive the Queen and the British people. She says, oh. So we're in England and London and we went down to Speaker's Corner there and there was people there and somebody talking about aliens, another one talking about the Quran and Muslims and stuff, and all kinds of speakers at Speaker's Corner in Hyde Park. And I was down there and I said, no, it doesn't feel right here. To my wife, she says, why don't you do it over by Buckingham Palace? Hey, that sounds good. So we're going to went over there in the morning. I put on my headband, took out my rattle, and she's filming it in the iPad. And I'm talking to the Queen. I said, introduced myself. In Shkwadich, but say, Antha has a heel that I'm telling him. My name's Jerry Oldman. I come here to forgive you, Queen of England, for your ancestors colonizing us. I want to let go of that hate I have for the colonizer so I can live in a good way and without being angry all the time, without being depressed. And I said, I want to forgive the people of England today for the way I was thinking of them and thinking they're all evil. And I've learned that all people aren't evil. So I want to forgive, I want to let that go, those feelings towards the English people. And I said, and I want to thank the English people. Because I understand that this River Thames here was so polluted that no life can live in there. It killed the river, Thames, dumping raw sewage in there, and, pollutants. Then you changed the law and you showed the world you can change, you made a law about modified foods and about being healthy foods, and stopping pollution. You showed the world that it can be done. I want to thank you for that. So I forgave them, and then I finished by singing a song and dancing in front of this big statue of the Queen. This gold on top, I could see it. And I'm dancing there. Forgave them. And that was really helped my mind. And I noticed a difference after a nice talk, and I go around London town. All of a sudden, English people were talking to me. Oh, I'm glad you come. Where are you from? Canada. Oh, I'm glad you come over. Because before that, I guess people could feel my resentment and my hate and would stay away from me. So I benefit from that. Because now I start learning about these English people start talking to me. And I learned more. So that's my forgiveness story and my healing journey for my mind. So I wanted to let you know out there in podcast land that we can change our mind. I was told that by an elder. Every day we wake up, we can change our mind. And I changed my mind many times about drinking, about swearing, about the food I eat, and about hate. And it's done nothing but good for me, so I wanted to share that with you. So that's what this podcast was about, and I'm going to do more about my healing journey in regards to my mind, my body, and my spirit. So I want to thank you for listening, and remember, each day you wake up, you can change your mind. And that our suffering is not 24/7. And I imagine, I guess in my mind, maybe there are some it is. And those ones are really bad way. And I guess maybe those are ones that are homeless and totally addicted. But we need to support them, send energy to them, encourage people to find healing, to let them know that healing is a reality and it can happen. So that's the message I wanted to give on this podcast. Thank you for listening and share it with people. You never know, it might help someone. Thank you.